the church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. Help us to fight this evil.
The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
To WW. How do you figure that is? Woodrow Wilson? Willy Wonka? Walter White?
I'm scared.
Scared of what?
You.
How many more people are gonna die because of us?
No!
It's time to tell the truth.
What are you gonna do to stop me?
Say my name. Eisenberg.
Well, that's kind of the series in a nutshell. The decline of an unassuming man who's diagnosed with cancer. He doesn't want his family to be burdened by his illness or the medical treatments he needs. He's willing to die, actually, rather than have that happen. By the end of the story that's told about him in the series Breaking Bad, he's an altogether different character. He is, in a lot of ways, pure sociopath. And, oddly enough, in his morally relativistic world, he's even willing to admit it. That was the series Breaking Bad. We're going to talk about the moral realism and relativism of that famous series. Joining us on this Tuesday afternoon, December the 3rd, Bob Perry. He's a speaker at Life Training Institute and an instructor for crossexamined.org. He's author of an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled Breaking Bad's Addicting Defense of Moral Realism. Bob, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Todd.
What made this show, and really, and its character, Walter White, so addicting to so many?
Well, I mean, I think the main thing was that the acting in the show was incredible. The storyline was just gripping. It was a storyline that whatever you expected that was going to happen next, even though you knew it was probably going to be bad, it turned out worse than you could even imagine. It was a compelling story that kept people interested in it week after week. Even the music, they would play older music. The lyrics would go along with the storyline in ways that were just frightening sometimes. So that was, as a TV show, just the basics of TV, it was very good. But I think it was also popular because even though people didn't, I don't know that they realized the philosophical implications of what the show was playing out, but that it took morality seriously. And showed the consequences of bad moral choices, of human nature gone astray. I think that was another reason that was very gripping to many people.
Just give us the story in a nutshell. Not so much its character arc, because it isn't an arc, it's a, I don't even know what you call it, it's an arrow straight down. but give us the basic story for those who never watched a single episode of the thing.
Okay, well, and let me say before I do that, too, a disclaimer here. I am in no way endorsing the show as a Christian. There were some very disturbing, graphic, inappropriate scenes, so I want to say that up front. So I don't want to get that confused. But it starts out with Bryan Cranston, who some people may recognize. He was Seinfeld's dentist back in the 80s, 90s. He was in Malcolm in the Middle. He was the dad, Hal. So he's a character that we are familiar with. But in this, he starts out as just kind of a normal guy. He's a dad, loving a father and a husband. He's got a teenage son and a baby on the way. He's a high school chemistry teacher. And he goes out. His brother-in-law is a DEA agent. who invites him to get a little excitement in his life because he's been diagnosed with cancer. He's kind of bummed out. He's kind of distraught. And his brother-in-law invites him to go on a ride-along with his DEA agents to bust a methamphetamine house that they know they're cooking methamphetamine there. So Walter White is the character's name. He goes along. He sits in the back of the car. His brother tells him, you know, you need to stay here because this could get dangerous. Just stay in the car and wait till we come back out. So the drug bust goes down, and Walter watches as a kid, looks like a late teen, 20-something kid, jumps out of the second-floor window of a house down onto a roof, onto the ground, and runs away, and he recognizes him as a former high school student of his. Realizing that he is involved in this drug business, Walter, who's, as I said, been diagnosed with cancer, decides, instead of telling his brother-in-law that, you know, what's going on here, he sees the kid, whose name is Jesse Pinkman in the show, as maybe a way to make some money to help pay for his cancer treatments. And so he tracks him down, those two meet, and they begin a partnership that, as you said, descends quickly into some very disturbing and downright evil behavior that as it goes through five seasons. And as it goes on, it just continues to get worse and worse, as I said before, worse than you can imagine. Some of the things that happen to them because of the decisions they make, and their partners in crime throughout all this that you kind of see, and the reason I found it interesting was because they kind of play out different views, the two basic views of moral theory, moral relativism and moral realism. And I think not that the authors intended it to be that way. I don't know that they did, but because that's the real world and because morality is real, I think they couldn't help but have that happen.
Give us a simple definition of Walter White's worldview, if you would, in terms of what is moral relativism.
Well, moral relativism is the idea that the morals are up to us. Either the individual, that's kind of a rare view of it, that each individual gets to make up his own morality. But what we hear a lot in our culture is that the community or culture that you live in comes to a consensus about what morality is. And Walter White is the epitome of that. His morals come from the consequences that he sees for himself, for his family, as I said, to try his cancer treatments. He wants to provide for his family. And so this starts out as, you know, his motivations are good. They're real. But the problem with it is that there's no objective principle that his morals can be measured by. He makes them up for himself. And if the consequences seem bad, he can rationalize that away anytime he wants. So, and he does that repeatedly. So moral relativism is what Walter White kind of embodies. It's a will to power. Nietzsche said that, you know, without God, there are no morals. God is dead. And Walter White becomes his own god, basically. He's driven by pride. He's driven by ambition. He's driven by even the good things at the beginning become bad as he continues to rationalize even the most vile decisions that you can imagine because they get him where he's trying to be, and he sees that as an okay thing. As opposed to moral realism, which is what I would define as that morals are objectively real things that are out there that we align ourselves to, not that we make up for ourselves, not that we vote and have a consensus about. But they're real things that we would say exist because they descend from the character of God that we have to align ourselves to. And Walter White does the exact opposite of that. He wants to be his own God, basically.
Oddly enough, his partner in crime, as you mentioned before, Jesse, is the moral realist here. He's not always consistent in that, of course, who is. But he represents that moral realism, or at least the voice of moral realism sometimes in the series. Give us an example of that with about a minute before we take our break.
Well, yeah, Jesse, and I'm not saying Jesse's the good guy and Walter's the bad guy. Jesse does some just as horrific things. But what the difference I think I see between them is that Jesse knows it. He witnesses, as an example, they rob a train one time, and a little kid, just by pure happenstance, rides up on his dirt bike, And one of the characters realizes that this kid has just seen them rob this train and could be a problem for him. So just without warning, without any notice, he shoots and kills this little 12, it looks like a 10 or 12-year-old kid. And Jesse is just breaks down. And for the rest of the series, that scene and the consequences that follow from some of those things, as well as other things that happen to kids that are in the story, he just cannot handle it emotionally. He's a complete basket case because of that. Because he recognizes that that's just not something you do, no matter if it is going to keep you safe from the authorities if you're caught robbing a train. You don't do stuff like that, and Jesse realizes that.
Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to go to a scene without spoiling the series too much for those who may not have watched it or plan to do so or haven't seen the end of it. But there's a scene there between Walter White and his wife that I think is very telling. We'll talk about it on the other side of the break. Bob Perry's our guest. We're talking about the moral realism and relativism of the show Breaking Bad.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
I'm not a Christian, but I listen to your show because actually you do have some interesting topics.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Do you believe that there's not one error in the Bible? That's intellectually infantile. You also believe that Jesus is coming again. You promote extremely sexually repressive views.
The Issues Etc. comment line. Available 24/7. 618-223-8382.
Have fun waiting for Jesus to return. Got news for you. He ain't coming back.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Pastor Todd, I downloaded your Issues Etc. app for my Android phone, and I listen to it while I'm on the treadmill.
You can listen to Issues Etc. live or on demand with the new Issues Etc. Android or iPhone app. You can download these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. Download an app today.
My new Adam really enjoys the app while I'm on the treadmill.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Tuesday afternoon. Another 10 minutes with Bob Perry, speaker at Life Training Institute and instructor for crossexamine.org, author of an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled Breaking Bad's Addicting Defense of Moral Realism. We're talking about the moral realism and relativism of that long-running series, Breaking Bad. There's a scene in the series that was very telling. You say it says a lot about what moral relativism ultimately results in a person's life. It's between Walter White and his wife. He's trying to explain why he did what he did. She expects him to say, you know, I did it all for the family. She says she didn't want to hear that anymore. And he finally just says, I did it for me. I liked it. I was good at it. I was alive. What does that tell you?
Well, it tells you that Walter's internal justification for the things he's done is just that. It's internal. He's driven by his own pride and ego at later in this. You know, as I said, he started off with good motivations. You're sympathetic to his reasons because he wants to provide for his family for cancer treatments that he needs to get. But then as it goes along, he starts to create this product the methamphetamine that's really, really good. It sells for a lot. I say good in the methamphetamine world and the drug world. It's very pure. It gives people the high they want. So there's a big demand for it, so they can charge more for the product. That allows him to expand his business. And as this goes on, it feeds his ego, not only as a chemist. He's almost OCD in his ability and desire to make the perfect product to sell, because he loves the chemistry. He actually really does love it. And so, but that turns into the pride that he is the best chemist. In your intro there, you play the tape of him telling another drug dealer to say his name. He wants people to respect who he is. So when he says, "I did it for me, I liked it, I was good at it," he's referring to his expertise as a chemist. And when he says he felt alive, his life was transformed from just trying to provide for his family into this prideful notion. Finally, into the fact that he wanted power over other people. He was running a drug empire, and he really liked that. It made him feel like he was important for the first time in his life. He started out, I think I said this earlier, as kind of a Walter Mitty-esque type guy who lived in this little world that was nice, and he kind of thought his own thoughts about how things could be. And now all of a sudden, he was there. He was the man. And so that is what drove him. And I think that's where moral relativism has to lead. If there's no outside standard to judge by, then you become the standard. And as we have seen throughout human history, that's not a good place to be.
Well, the insight that you have there that ultimately what is his ultimate desire he's trying to satisfy is power, is that will to power. There's one scene where he's got they open a garage door or something, and he's got a garage just with mountains of money in it.
Right.
I mean, money, very soon in his life, is not his problem. And the thing he thought was his problem isn't, but he wants power, ultimately. That's a very telling thing about the relativistic moral worldview, isn't it?
Yes, it is. In fact, his wife, who you just brought up when she's asking him, she says, "I don't want to hear that you did this for the family," because she's been drawn into this whole deal so deeply that she is the one who's actually collecting the money, and they have a storage unit that in one scene she opens up the storage unit to show him, and it's this pile of money that's covered up that she said, "I can't even keep track of it. I can't make it disappear anymore. I don't know what else can we do with this. How much more do you need?" And for him, he hasn't even considered the money for months now, because that's, you know, he went from Walter Mitty to greedy to egotistical to now it's all about power, and the money is just a means to get there. It doesn't even really faze him. In fact, throughout the show, he doesn't really even spend the money very often. That's not what drives him. It is very telling. I want to point out that I wrote this article, co-authored it with Robert Velarde, so it was both of us who worked on this, but we started off with a quote from Greg Kokel and Francis Beckwith from their book, Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair, and they say, "One way to assess the validity of a moral system is to see the kind of person it produces. The quintessential relativist is a sociopath, one with no conscience. This is what relativism produces." And as I was watching the show near the beginning of season one, that quote popped into my head as I watched Walter White do his thing, and it stuck with me for the rest of the next five seasons, because I think he was a perfect example of what Greg Kokel and Francis Beckwith are talking about there.
The other insight you have that I found very helpful is, and this kind of comes out very much in the last season, but it's the role of pride in his life, and I hadn't really even thought about it, but looking back on kind of putting that framework around the very first couple episodes of Breaking Bad, at first, he's a kind of a humble man who feels like his life is unfulfilled. He hasn't reached his potential. He kind of knows it. Not a failure, but not what he thought he could be. And it comes out especially with his interaction with his more wealthy threat friends and things like that. He's too proud to ask for help from anybody. But in the end, he's just kind of the personification of pride. What are your thoughts there?
Well, right. When you learn throughout the show that it further before the story began, that he had developed or started a company with some friends who became very wealthy as a result, and he was left out of the deal. And so part of his motivation with those people, they actually offer to pay for his cancer treatments, and he goes so far as to lie to his wife and pretend that they're paying for him while he's actually paying for it with the drug money he's making, because he will not accept their pride. And it goes, you know, I know you don't want too many spoilers here, but to the very last show, he still holds this grudge, prideful grudge against those former partners and friends of his who he thinks have, taken advantage of him in the business world. And he is driven by that to the point where he will do anything to prove that he is worthy of not only the money that he could have made, but the power that he gets from running a company, a business, I guess we should say, not a company, of his own. And that is, in the end, that is the biggest motivator for Walter White, is his pride.
How would you evaluate his alter ego, Heisenberg?
That's a good question. Heisenberg is kind of the who Walter White, when he was Walter Mitty, dreamed about what he could be. He's the guy who is the pure chemist, who people respect on the street. They use this alter ego named Heisenberg to refer to him because no one actually knows who he is, and he loves that. It turns out that he makes when he says "say my name," that's the name he wants the other drug dealer to say, is Heisenberg, because that demands respect. Not only for the drug business, but also for him as a chemist. And so Heisenberg, for him, is who Walter White thought he should have been from the beginning. And he's made that come true, obviously in a negative way that he never would have considered, 2 years prior to that. But he has become the person that he thought he should be, that he deserved to be.
Finally, then, just, we haven't talked a lot about the crystal meth business that is the kind of the other character of the entire series, but it just occurs to me that this is one of the most heinous addictions a person could possibly have. It routinely destroys lives all across the country. There's no doubt about that. So that this story really isn't just about a man's personal self-destruction. It's about the wake of all those people that were using his product that we don't get to see in the series.
Right, and I think that's, you don't see a lot of direct result of that, but you see what happens in the drug dealer world as a result of that. And it does show, that, I mean, there are several episodes where you see people who are using this, who are trying to make deals with other people for their territory in the city that they're controlling with this methamphetamine, and their lives are just a complete disaster. So much so that it's actually sickening, really, to watch that. And that's one of the strengths, I think, of the show, is it does not glorify the drug underworld. It shows what the real consequences of drugs are and how they destroy people's lives all the way down. And I don't know. I guess this was intentional, but
about 20 seconds here.
Yeah. Throughout every season, it seems to. We see the direct impact that it has on children in all kinds of ways, and I think that was powerful too.
Bob Perry is a speaker at Life Training Institute, an instructor for crossexamine.org, author of an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled Breaking Bad's Addicting Defense of Moral Relativism. We'll post links to Life Training Institute and crossexamine.org at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Bob, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd. Have a good holiday.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to have Dr. Stephen Ware answer the question, when was Jesus really born? We'll discuss postmodern hermeneutics, a biblical interpretation, that is, from a postmodern perspective. Chris Rosebrough will be our guest. There's no doubt about it. I mean, God has made the universe to work this way. There's a moral framework to the universe because it is built by God, and it reflects that character of God. And there's no doubt about it that the consequences follow. Of course, Scripture tells us there are eternal consequences, not just temporal consequences, but eternal ones as well. All of them, temporal and eternal, born by Jesus Christ for every sinners, even the Walter Whites and the Heisenbergs of this world, and that includes you and me. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
What makes Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Freeburg, Illinois so special? Our new members talk about the family atmosphere, the welcoming people, and the outstanding music. But most importantly, you'll be confronted with your sin and comforted with the assurance that Jesus has removed that sin so that you can live each day as His baptized and forgiven child. Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church is at 612 North State Street in Freeburg, Illinois. Sunday worship is at 9 a.m., Sunday school and Bible classes at 10:20 a.m. Call 618-539-5664.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.